Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer. This is a place where we celebrate the power of dreams and coincidence and imagination, things that are often undervalued, just in our culture, but can be the source of creativity, guidance, help us to do better in this world and have access to other worlds. And certainly, our wonderful guest today is one of those who knows something about both, about operating in this world in a deeper way and finding portals that open into other worlds. Her name is Camilla Wells Painter. I'm holding in my hand a lovely book of poems and stories called A Basket Unwoven. We'll ask her to explain the title, A Basket Unwoven. The subtitle we'll all resonate with, Stories and Poems from a Dream Country, Stories and Poems from Dream Country to Core. Welcome, Camilla.
Hello, Robert. Delighted to
be here. I've been dipping again into your collection of stories. I've had the pleasure of seeing some of them come to you and grow in your mind at retreats we've shared at a magical place in the Pacific Northwest, which is the area where you live. First of all, why call a book A Basket Unwoven?
That title comes from a dream, actually. I had a dream once, remarkably short for one of my dreams, in which I found myself sitting in an ancient forest in this area where I live, as you mentioned, the Pacific Northwest. And I was an ancient grandmother of the Coast Salish people, and I was unweaving a basket in that dream. I was picking it apart, sitting on the ground, carefully pulling out the pieces and the strands and unweaving it and watching it sort of pile into a heap on the ground beneath me. And in that dream, it was made very clear to me that this was a kind of metaphor for storytelling, that to live an experience is to weave a basket, and to unweave the basket is to relate or narrate the experience to the outer world.
That's thrilling to me for several reasons. First of all, to dream with the people of the land in an area where one lives or is visiting or is being called to dream with them, not like them, but with them, is already very, very interesting. It's an example, perhaps, of how our dreams are our visas or even our passports, the different cultures and traditions, in this case, for the ancestors of the land where we live or where we travel. The whole metaphor of making a story out of experience by unweaving the basket is so interesting. I mean, as you know, cross-culturally, weaving baskets is very important. It's even cosmological for a lot of indigenous people. I think of cultures where the role of, and of course it promotes the role of the women, because women are nearly always the prime basket weavers. I think of the people of the southern part of this hemisphere, the Yekuana or Makiritari. I mean, their basket weaves and their patterns are enormously important, and they tell stories about the cosmos itself. I don't know about unpicking such patterns. They make sense to me as a literary metaphor, as something that writers and storytellers do. I wonder whether, if we were able to look into it further, whether we would find that there is such a practice, literally, of someone telling a story by unweaving a basket. Were you able to find anything like that?
I was not, but I will admit I didn't do a whole lot of research on it either.
Well, I'm compelled to do it, because synchronicity is always in play. And as I talk to you about the Coast Salish peoples, I'm also thinking about the First Peoples of my native Australia. And something that they do out in the Western Desert, which I was just writing about again, I mean, when they tell their dreams and they tell their stories, their hands are always moving, not just their mouths. What they're doing, if they're sitting around a fire with the billy can boiling with water for the tea, is they're drawing pictures in the sand. A popular book called Sand Talk, it picks up that theme. But if you watch them, or if you listen to those who have lived with them, they're drawing maps, they're drawing pictures, they're drawing the key characters, the key features as they're talking. And so doing something with your hands in what it is in both cases probably a pre-literate culture, basically, makes a lot of sense. I mean, you're not writing in the ordinary sense, and yet you're making your pictographs, and it's something to do with your hands, and it's going to engage your audience. So the whole thing is really quite wonderful. Anyway, I'm picking your stories. I just thought I'd pick up one theme, one element from one of your stories, and bring in a story about a writer somewhere else that I've been thinking about for a couple of days and just let it hang between us. There's a certain amount of fishing and a certain amount of watery stuff going on in your stories and poems, and it coincides with me looking at the letters and memoirs of Ted Hughes. You've probably read some of his material. He's a very famous British poet who was actually poet laureate for 14 years until his death in 1998. Some people think of him primarily as the husband of Sylvia Plath, who killed herself, unfortunately, and there's a whole story of personal dramas and family tragedies. But one of the things about Ted Hughes that I've been thinking about is he's one of those major writers, major poets, who's also a big-time dreamer. I mean, he paid a lot of attention to dreams. He wrote about his dreams. He kept a dream journal all his life. He wrote about dreams to people. One that I was thinking about and actually wrote a little bit about yesterday was a dream that got him off the wrong track onto the right track when he was still an undergraduate at Cambridge. He was doing English literature, and he didn't like it because it was all analysis of lit crit. He wanted to get on with creative writing, and he'd find himself night after night failing to write the required weekly essay, finding that torment because it's all lit crit and analysis, and he doesn't want to do it, and he's there at 2 o'clock in the morning staring at a blank page. And one night when this happens, he falls into bed and he dreams that a fox appears at the door, walking on his hind legs, covered with burns, really charred as if he's just come through a fire, and sort of glaring eyes. And the fox lays a human hand, not a fox's paw, but a human hand on the blank page, and blood spurts. And the fox says, "Stop this. You're destroying it." And he wakes up and he thinks, right, that's it. I've got to stop what I'm doing and do something else. So he switches. He changes subject. He takes up anthropology. He gets his degree in anthropology and archaeology. And it's an example of a writer being guided by a very, very, very dramatic dream. He hasn't published much at this point, but we can still call him a writer because he's going to be a big one. Being guided by a dream away from something. You know, he has to be taken out of something before he gets to something. And then another theme that comes up in his dreams, which is the one that I'm looping back to, it's the one I intended to focus on, is the fish. He was a very keen fisherman, and he didn't give all that many interviews, but one he gave was to a fisherman's magazine in Canada. And he told one of his fish dream stories. He said he was fishing in Cold Hill Pond, which is a pond on an estate. He is a boy allowed to walk around and fish, and he had a boyhood friend on the estate. And according to legend, there was the grandfather of all pike, you know, this toothy carnivorous fish. The grandfather of all pike lived in that pond. And in his dream, he manages to get it, to haul it out. And he is triumphal. It's a great victory. He's caught the grandfather pike. And then the next day, he sells a poem, either for the first time or for the first significant time that he gets a check. And also, maybe not incidentally, he marries Sylvia Plath on the same day. So landing the big fish plays out as a personal dream symbol in a couple of ways. And one of the most, I mean, here's the sort of the direction via indirection of what I'm saying. One of your most moving and really fascinating stories ends with somebody going off in a certain way and announcing he's gone fishing. So talk to us about fish, waters, your sense of, you talk about your connection with the Salish Sea, and also, since we've raised the theme with a couple of examples, how dreams have guided you towards writing or maybe away from a certain line of writing that you've been engaged in.
Mm-hmm. Well, water, I mean, you can't avoid it where I live, and it took me, I think, a long time to realize how much that environment, the shoreline environment, had got under my skin. I did have one of the other stories in the book deals with an experience that I had, based on an experience that I had many years ago when I was running and crossing the shipping locks here. And at that place, there is a salmon ladder. And if you're there at the right time of year, you can watch the salmon run up the ladder, which is one of the most amazing things I think anyone will ever see. And I was running by that place one time and felt this overpowering urge to stop. And I stopped and I looked over the railing into the water, and there they were, this massive school of huge salmon, coho salmon. And I suddenly felt that they had something to say to me. And I won't give away that message. That's the story in the book. But it was it was a waking dream in which I heard the voices of the salmon. It's an important theme for me.
That's very exciting. I've seen fish ladders. I actually have not seen one in the Pacific Northwest, but you give me a very keen memory of one that I was actually so struck by. I made a painting of it. Again, a waking dream, something I watched in ordinary life, but the salmon. I don't know whether you ever read Starhawk's novel, The Fifth Sacred Thing, but there's a scene in it in which there are speakers for the elemental powers. I mean, they're humans wearing whole head masks, and the salmon speaker in that scene is such an important human speaking for the fish or the salmon, inspired perhaps by the spirit of the salmon. And clearly what the salmon have to say to you and to us is very important. And of course, you know well the significance of the salmon, both for the local peoples of the Pacific Northwest and for our ancestors in the old world, for whom the salmon is the great fish of wisdom, the one that eats the nuts from the hazel tree of wisdom, and whose very, very, the slightest taste of the salmon produces the druid's deepest magic and wisdom. So to hear from the salmon, even if you won't speak it aloud in our conversation, is a rare and precious thing.
You asked about dreams that guided me either toward writing or away from something. I've had many of such. I mean, I think my dreams have guided me through my life. They've allowed me to access transcendent knowledge. They are the wellspring of my creativity. They're the primary source for me of anamnesis, or re-remembering, which we might get to in this conversation. I remember one in particular. It was also years ago. I had actually was struggling in jobs that I didn't like and didn't feel like me, weren't satisfying to me. And I'd asked my acupuncturist, actually, to do a meditation on her own time and see if she could sort of see something for me in my future. And she came back, and she, to my great shock, I had not studied creative writing. I wasn't even an English major. To my great surprise, she came back and said to me, "All I can see is you as a writer. It's all I can see." And I said, no, I blew that one off. I was like, that's not going to happen. And it wasn't long after that, I think, I had a dream in which I was told very clearly, write everything down. It didn't say go off and, be a writer. It said, just write everything down. It, all the dreams, all the non-ordinary experiences, all the out-of-body travels, everything like that that you've experienced, I understood I was to write it all down. And that's when I started keeping a journal. And my journal subsequently became the primary source of inspiration for me. I had had a feeling for a while, just only a few years ago, I kept getting this sense, like, in that way of unseen guidance, you know, that kind of subtle urge to do something that maybe your rational mind would question. And that had to do with writing, using that material from all of those journals that I'd been lugging around with me for decades. And so I had to learn how to write in order to find a way to do that. And my writing is still in its infancy, but that all had to do with the dream, for sure.
Well, you're a marvelous storyteller and poet, and your writing is great. How do you let people love the bones, the sinews, the mechanics of these things? How do you keep a journal? How do you produce your first journal content of the day? Do you write by hand? Do you record? Do you go to a computer? And what do you write to start off with?
I used to write by hand. Hence the boxes full of journals that I carry around with me everywhere. But lately I don't. I always write on a computer. My handwriting has gotten increasingly bad, and I type much faster than I write. So I always keep a digital journal now. And I do basically first thing in the morning whenever I can. If I can't, if I have to be somewhere, I'll take some notes. So that the dreams don't slip away, as sometimes is their want. But, I'll just get my coffee, crawl into bed with my computer, and as fresh out of the dream as I can be, start writing it down. And this is something, that a practice that I began because of you. I always start with a title.
Right. Here's a very important procedural question. Which comes first, the first sip of coffee or the first words?
The coffee first.
You see, I'm one ahead of you or one behind you. I mean, I start writing before I have coffee. I might wait. However I feel about the coffee, I might even wait for an hour. However, I'm not necessarily writing something all that fresh, because I'm engaged again in writing books, and the books I'm writing are nonfiction and involve bringing together an immensity of research in previous drafts and crushing and condensing and unpicking, if you like, millions and millions of words. So my first process of the day might be to play around with something I'm trying to bring together from different drafts, infused maybe by a stir that comes from the night. Sometimes the stir for me these days, I mean, I always remember lots of dreams, but these days I don't always write them down. I might be content to let a certain kind of rhythm come from the night. Dickens, who was a dreamer but didn't record all that many dreams, once told a doctor friend that he used to write with waves of words rolling through his mind, rolling through his being. He would write with the rhythm of the waves of words from which he awakened. And I loved that image. So I'll have that sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'll come out of a wave of writing, editing, researching, all of that kind of thing, because as I say, I'm writing an immense book. I think it's at least three volumes involving so many things.
Fantastic.
I think they're coming together. So my process at the moment is a bit different from usual. The usual process all of my life, I start with the dreams. I write the dreams first. But that's not, I still haven't written a rather lovely dream from last night, but its energy has been with me. However, just to step back from this, keeping a journal, I think, and perhaps you think too, is the essential workout,
yes.
The essential exercise for anyone who wants to be a writer. And because, you know, you don't have to share your journal to anyone else, and certainly shouldn't let anybody look at it without permission, without you choosing to share something, it's your private place. It doesn't, your standards don't matter. The critic can be left safely left aside. It's all for you. Between you and yourself, your soul, your inner guides. And, you know, whatever you write is practice, isn't it? I mean, it's exercising your writing muscles, and if you do it for long enough, you'll find you get something that is a keeper, something to play with. So this is essential practice. When I think of this question of how dreams have guided or failed to guide me and other people as a writer, I notice that for me, the dreams that brought me off the wrong path in the course of my life, looking at the whole story of it, have been as important to me in relation to writing and publishing as the dreams that took me forward along the right path. The dreams like the dream of Ted Hughes, of the charred fox, the burnt fox, that persuaded him to leave a path that just wasn't right for him. I think of big dreams like that in my life, and of course they apply to life itself, not just to writing and publishing, but very specific dreams that got me off track at that time and thereby enabled me to get on the right one. Well, let's tell some more stories of this kind and talk a little bit about maybe recent dreams and recent dream experiences. You have wonderful dream narratives every time we talk, so maybe you want to tell us a recent dream story, and maybe we'll even play a little bit with our game of lightning dream work, dream sharing. Camilla, if people want to find you and find your book, how do they do that? The title of the book, it's self-published. The title, as many good writers have to do these days, and sometimes everything grows. It's called A Basket Unwoven, Camilla Wells Painter. If they're looking for you online, where should they look?
They can look on my website, which is songdogdreaming.com. That's S-O-N-G-D-O-G, dreaming.com. And
right.
If
well,
anyone...
We'll say that again after the break. You'll listen to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back with more dreams, more stories after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right, you can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Hop over to my website, mossdreams.com. You'll see that I'm doing some new online courses. In fact, we're starting the new cycle of my dream teacher training. Perhaps that will call for you. It's the people who want to be part of rebirthing a dreaming society in our world now. They don't follow any necessary track. Some become dream teachers, some bring it into an existing line of work or creative play. Some come to be part of the fun with extraordinary dreamers from all over the world. But anyway, go to mossdreams.com and take a look. And go to Camilla's website. What's your website again, Camilla? Songdog?
Songdog, S-O-N-G-D-O-G, dreaming.com.
songdogdreaming.com. Now that sounds promising. You want to get over there. You want a copy of her book. I mean, go get a copy of her book. I mean, she self-published it, which is a brave thing to do. And it's delightful. The poems, the stories, I mean, they're rippling with freshness. You can smell the Salish Sea. You can smell those deep green mossy trees, evergreen trees of Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. I mean, it's delightful. So, Camilla, I have a tiny dream fragment from last night. Can I share it with you? And can you play
Absolutely.
Dream Guide for me for a moment? It's tiny.
Absolutely.
I haven't written it down yet, so I'm publishing it right now. I'm at a place that in the dream I know and in waking life reminds me of other places. Notice I haven't given you a title yet, so you can get one out of me later. And I have someone with me who might be my youngest daughter, but is younger than my youngest daughter is. So I have a companion who is like a young girl, perhaps 12 years old. And last time I walked this mountain path, it was very, very difficult. There was snow and ice. And the trail was very steep and very dangerous and sometimes very narrow. This time, to my surprise and delight, the path is open, it's clear, there's no snow and ice, the sun is shining, it's wide enough to walk without any fear of the heights. It's very easy. And we walked together down the mountain path, which has now become so benign and so delightful, and come to a lovely, lovely place of retreat, a place of sanctuary perhaps, place of vacation, relaxation, also a creative place. I'm not sure whether I'm leading workshops here or not, perhaps because people speak to me as if I'm a teacher. And I'm thinking, well, I'll follow the example of this very tall, very distinguished black woman who's going to go swimming. I'm going to go swimming because there are two marvelous deep pools. I can see them. And I'm now getting ready to go into the water. So this is the whole dream passage, very simple, as I recall it and want to tell it. And I guess the title is, The Path is Open.
Path is open.
The path is open.
Lovely. Beautiful dream. What were your feelings after you had that dream?
I felt delighted. I mean, as you know, because you've seen me recently, I have significant physical issues these days, mobility problems, and so on. None of those are present in the dream. I mean, I'm fine. I don't think I have any recollection that my physical body isn't working very well. I mean, I'm not Superman, but I have, I'm able to handle myself on the trail, and I think, although I didn't get into it before, I woke up in the pool perfectly well. The place is familiar, yet it does not correspond to a physical location, not really. It reminds me in some ways of physical places, but it's quite familiar in the dream. I mean, I have walked that mountain trail before when there was ice and it was difficult. So there's keen curiosity as well as delight, really. Delight and curiosity. The curiosity is that this place is so familiar, and yet I don't think I know it in ordinary life.
So is there anything else about it that might correspond either to your ordinary waking reality or perhaps to other dreams? So you've mentioned you felt that you've been in that location in dreams before. So maybe another theme in dreams that it relates to or something in your ordinary reality? Could it play out somehow?
Well, I don't think these days it anticipates a physical adventure. I don't think it's precognitive in that sense. But I think it does relate to dreams over the years, maybe over the whole of this life, of being on the road in some way or another and different things happen on the road. And how does this correspond to the life road? So I do relate it to dreams in the past in which I was on a road and sometimes there are problems and sometimes it was open. And in this one, the path is open. So it feels very promising in terms of wherever my life path is leading right now. And because I've been giving most of my time and attention to bringing through some new books, I think I related to that. There might be a positive health advisory, but I think it's probably more related to my path, my vocational path as a writer and also as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything you most want to know about the dream?
Well, I'm curious about the other characters in the dream. There's the majestic black woman, very tall, very majestic. And her white husband turn up at some point and seem to know the place well. I don't know them. They feel like people that I might want to get to know. I'm curious about the girl who is with me, who reminds me of my daughter, but is not necessarily. Are these stand-ins? Are these masks for aspects of myself or for other people I come into contact with? I'm curious about them. I'm curious about the pool. The pool is wonderful. It's a very natural-seeming pool. Maybe I can get back inside the dream and actually go for a swim, at least in my dream body.
Absolutely. If this were my dream, the first thing that came to me is exactly what you said. I would take that to be a positive message about my latest creative pursuits and maybe just take from that smooth sailing is ahead. And possibly also that I have guides along the way. I think if it were my dream, the majestic woman and her husband and the girl who took me by the hand would definitely have function as kinds of guides along my creative process. And I might go back into the dream and try to have some conversations with them.
That's a good idea. I do that from time to time. As you know, I encourage other people to go and have a talk to their dream characters, and what emerges from it can be fascinating. I might do that. I might just pick up my pen. I think I'll do this with handwriting, even though I can't read my writing either. I might just ask them to tell me who they are and see what they have to say. That can be a very startling thing sometimes. You can have that moment when you start off thinking, you know, in the psychologically correct sort of Jungian way, oh, this is an aspect of me. And then your character speaks up for themselves and said, you might want to think that, but I'll let you know. I'm going to speak for myself. I have my own ideas about things. Jung found that when he was trying to understand the characters who kept appearing to him in what he called his confrontation with the unconscious. They'd speak up and say, don't think. You know, we're just your own thoughts. We are as objective as leopards or winds. They'd say things to him like that. And he had to acknowledge that there was something more, just pieces of himself talking back to him. Yes, that's a good action plan. I will make a few minutes available as an action plan to therapists.
Great. Excellent. Now I'm going to put you on the spot. I need to put you on the spot now, because do you have a bumper sticker?
You do, don't you? It's the same one. My path is open.
My path is open. Perfect.
Yes. That's very good. So we did it in a short amount of time. I wandered a bit, as I'm capable of doing and as dream tellers are almost bound to do. But at the end of it, you got an action plan out of me and you got a bumper sticker. So we just demonstrated for those who aren't thoroughly familiar with this by now that we can do a lot with a friend in terms of sharing a dream, getting some non-intrusive, non-authoritarian feedback, and being guided towards action in a few minutes. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We're having a lovely conversation with poet, writer, dreamer, Camilla Painter, Camilla Wells Painter. Her book is A Basket Unwoven, and picture her pulling the pieces of the basket, unpicking the basket as she tells the stories that life and dreaming have given her in the forest amongst those astonishing mossy, giant evergreen trees. I think I've been so touched by the trees of the Pacific Northwest. I'm particularly drawn to the great, nurse stumps and nurse logs from which new trees are growing that might seem to be dead but are giving their nutrients to bring forth new life. And it's a wonderful, wonderful image of regeneration. So one of the things that drew me to you and your stories, Camilla, is Webb Wowart. You actually mentioned the name in a poem. I think it's a poem of Webb Wowart. And we have a lot of people who have some sort of Egyptian connection in and around our dream school. So Webb Wowart is not a mystery name, not an unknown name. I used to give an invocation, which is originally dedicated to Webb Wowart rather than Anubis, with whom he's easily confused. I mean, they're very similar. They're cousins. They're not exactly the same about asking guidance and blessing and protection for a safe journey to the other side and back. So tell us, who is Webb Wowart to you, and why did you write a poem about him?
Well, I was not familiar with Webb Wowart. I had been familiar with Anubis, the more familiar jackal god of Egypt, but I was introduced to Webb Wowart by a practitioner of Kemetic paganism, which is a sort of modern revival of ancient Egyptian religion. I don't have any particular Egyptian connections myself that I'm aware of, but this person introduced me to Webb Wowart, and since I love a gatekeeper and a good wild dog, too, I decided to make Webb Wowart a subject of song. I've always had an affinity for the role of the gatekeeper. Many decades ago, I had a sort of mentor, a man of the Sami people, who had this habit of dropping startling pronouncements and then not following them up with explanation. And I was young at the time and always afraid to ask. And one day, one of these pronouncements was, "You're a gatekeeper." Just that, just out of the blue. My only comment to him was, "Yeah, somehow I know that. True, even though I have no idea what you mean by that." And he just said, and nodded. But, now, in retrospect, his pronouncement makes sense. Anyone who dreams is, in some sense, de facto a type of gatekeeper. I mean, a gatekeeper isn't just someone who prohibits entry. A gatekeeper is someone who facilitates crossing. And as dreamers, we do that. I think it's in your pledge of the dream teacher, isn't it? I will build bridges between worlds.
Yes, and of course we always, at the start and at the end of any class that I lead, we say an invocation to the gatekeeper, which, although no names are mentioned, which honors Anubis and Webb Wowart and Hermes and Hecate and Allegra and Deshu and Ganesha, it honors all the gang. I mean, the gatekeeper is a very, very important figure in our lives. Perhaps one of the most important mythic figures, and you have to get past the gatekeeper to get to the good stuff. Can you find that? I was just looking at your book. It didn't open to it immediately. Can you find your poem to Webb Wowart and read it to us? Have your book
Absolutely.
In front of you?
Excuse me. It's called Keeper of the Key.
Okay.
I am Webb Wowart.
If you read it to us, that would be lovely.
Yes, absolutely. I am Webb Wowart. the jackal, opener of ways, guardian of the threshold, master of the edges of worlds. Not a street is crossed without me, nor the emptiness between here and the beyond. My name is Passage. To the sleeping and the dead I am known. To the living I grant my riddle. Looking at a door, what is it that you see?
It's lovely. Lovely.
Thank you.
Of course, Wild is also in the mythology on the move, probably more than Anubis, because jackals in the desert would be on the move, of course, all the time. But Wild is also depicted in advance of the army. He's right up there at the front, ahead of the pharaoh, ahead of the king, ahead of the general on the path. So mm-hmm. there's also, when I think about Webwire, there's also a sense of decisive motion, forward motion.
Yes.
So that's another element that I would add out of the reason perhaps why I find him a very simpatico figure. Yeah, this whole idea that, I mean, in the Yoruba tradition, which is one that I engaged with quite actively a while ago in the New World, you have to pay off the gatekeeper at the very beginning. You have to, tiene que pagar el derecho. You have to pay the right of passage. If you don't do that, you're in trouble. And what you have to pay varies according to the reading and the situation and the wishes of the great powers. In my case, it was love. It was love for the spirit. That was the price I had to pay. But there was an enforcer there, a gatekeeper, was going to make sure that the price was paid, necessary price was made for the passage. So, Camilla, what have you been dreaming lately? Some of your dreams are really epic in their length and their complexity, with all sorts of great plot twists. But if you could find one you'd like to share with us, and maybe this time we'll focus on it as a story rather than any kind of job of dream work. If you'd like to tell us a dream as a story, that would be lovely.
Sure.
Time left in this segment, so we can talk around it and then give the next 8 minutes to it rather than cut you off.
Absolutely.
So let me float the question. Do dreams feed specific stories or poems or something beyond the journal entry in which they record them? Do you see something flowing beyond that from a dream?
Both, I would say. I mean, sometimes I get a really specific, you know, oh, this is something I can write about. Sometimes it's more just an idea, a nudge. For example, I was struggling I was struggling with writing my mother's eulogy, and I had a direction I wanted it to go in, and I wasn't sure it was going to be a crowd pleaser. And I had this, I awoke with this hypnagogic, just the name, Joan Didion. Couldn't even remember who she was. Had to go look her up. I was like, why this? Why did this occur to me? And went that night. Here's your action plan, and found a documentary on her on Netflix and watched it and was struck immediately when in that part of the documentary where it occurred. I was struck by the phrase, write your material. And I wrote the eulogy that I wanted to write, and there was not a dry eye in that crowd when I was done delivering it. So.
It's lovely when the message actually is very simple and actionable immediately. And you, of course, did something that I recommend and find I'm doing almost every day, which is you accepted the research assignment. You're given a name. You don't know the context. You don't know why. But immediately you find a resource that shows you why it was the right direction to follow. Dreams
yes.
do hand us research assignments all the time. And people are missing out if they won't accept them. Of course, some of us go further. Crazily further than you think is possible, doing what Jung called amplification. When Jung said amplification, he meant, okay, you've got a lead, drag it through the mythology, the anthropology, the cosmology, the folklore, you know, wherever it leads you, the linguistics, etc. And I'm doing that almost every day. I mean, being a very bookish fellow all my life, I'm often given literary or linguistic clues in words or phrases or whole passages, sometimes in languages that I know somewhat, but there's more than I can immediately translate. Sometimes in language that I don't really know at all, but there's enough to transcribe and work from. So I get lots of clues like that. And like you, I'll get a particular name or particular connection. And what has this got to do with anything? And why am I dreaming this name from the Arthurian cycle, which no longer engages me the way it did when I was a boy? Why am I getting this? What's the analogy today? But so it's fun to be given these assignments, to follow them up. It's also fun, as I said, when the directive is relatively simple and concise and actionable, something we can move with right away. I remember I once quoted to someone who said, Robert, you know, if you think that dreams are coming in the service of health and wholeness and helping us out and all the rest of it, why are they so difficult to decode so often? Well, I said, first of all, symbols take us from what we know or think we know to what we do not yet know, therefore some kind of inquiry, some kind of maturation, some kind of marination is going to be required, and it might take time. Then I remembered what the ancient dream interpreter Artemidorus said. If he was asked the same question, he said, well, if the gods are trying to give us messages and dreams, why the hell are they clearer? Why do they speak so obscurely? And Artemidorus said, well, the gods make us sweat because they want us to work for knowledge. I'm paraphrasing, of course. They don't want us just to have it on a plate. They want us to work, to expand our knowledge. They want us to sweat. So that might be it as well. But you and I know that way of talking about dreams is only one of many. I mean, we dream in many ways. We dream in different worlds of dreaming. In fact, you actually travel from one culture to another. You go to your Salish peoples inside the culture, and they're not in our world. I mean, yes, I mean, our world has come upon them. Our world has intruded upon theirs, and they have to deal with our world. But when it comes to dreaming and where the mind and the soul is, they're not in the world of modern society at all. It's a different world. It has its own laws. It's not just that they believe things differently. They experience things differently. So to go dreaming with a different people like that is traveling in a very profound sense. It requires us to open our skin and our mind and our presence to something. And you do that as a poet. I mean, poets are well equipped to do this, because poets are used to one thing turning into another. They live by metaphor. And therefore, in the metaphorical enterprise of moving from one world to another, one reality to another, they are well equipped. All right, we're talking to Camilla Wells Painter, her wonderful book of dreams and stories and poems. Go look for it. Go to her to Song Dog Dreams, songdogdreams.com, is that right?
Songdogdreams.com.
Go look for her and get a book, A Basket Unwoven. You will not be disappointed. We'll be back, Camilla, to tell us a story after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
This is Robert Nosju. We're back with Way of the Dreamer. We have a treat. Camilla Painter is now going to tell us a dream story. Over to you, Camilla.
Hello. Well, funny because during the break we were discussing time being squirrely, and this is a story about that. This is a recent dream that I had. I dream of Basel, Switzerland, a place I've never been to and don't know anything about. And the dream is mostly taking place in the 1800s, but also into modern times. In the modern world, there's a story about a popular TV show that was aired around the world and in many countries, involving a woman and her younger brother and their family, their interactions with their parents. I distinctly notice that the brother and the sister are portrayed, though by different actors, as having similar features in each depiction, no matter what the country, and I think that becomes important later on. The most prominent scene is one of the scenes in the 1890s, which I recognize, within the dream I recognize this is not fiction. This is based on something that happened. A father and son are drowned. The son is killed unwittingly by his alcoholic father when they both fall into one of the city's canals at night in wintertime. And the father, drunk and in a panic, is grabbing onto his son, submerging him in this cold, dark water while he's struggling to survive. I have a strong impression that the son would have been able to survive if the father hadn't been acting like that. So later I find myself in the 19th century there. Basel is blanketed in snow. The city's homeless women, who are poor grandmothers in heavy wool dresses and headscarves, have brought to the city officials three dead children, all very young, maybe 1 to 3 years old. The youngest baby was abandoned in an antique pram. It appears that they may all have died of exposure and hypothermia. They seem to be from the same family, perhaps products of serial pregnancies whom the parents couldn't care for. The old homeless ladies are distraught, deeply grieving for the children, and it's Christmas Eve night. In the village square, a choir is singing O Little Town of Bethlehem. And the city seems like an idyllic Christmas scene from a card or something. It's old stone brick buildings, a cobblestone square, Victorian lamplight, and this soft, sparkling coverlet of snow, except there are these dead children, these weeping, homeless women. So that day, after I wake up, having had this dream and recorded it, I saw a news report about a father and son who in our area who were drowned when their boat capsized in a river. I don't know the circumstances, but it's not hard to imagine that they might have been similar to the canal scene. So that was one of the things that happened. And at that point, I decided I needed to do some research. We were talking about this. I was not at all aware that Basel had canals until I had the dream and looked it up. I had assumed that the canal was like just a dream-generated anomaly, you know, but actually they existed. So I kind of take from this that I'm tapping into not just the boating accident, which does sometimes happen. I do tend to float around when something like that happens, but also maybe a whole, like, alternate life scenario, past, quote-unquote, life scenario, in which the father and son, you know, were continuing to enact an unresolved theme of their relationship. I kind of, at that point, I took the TV show that was aired in many countries to refer to a sort of karmic or ancestral plot played out over and over in many different lifetimes, and the resemblances of the characters referring to the correspondences in these, the father and son relationship. So That was a recent dream that I thought was interesting.
Well, it is interesting, and you told it well, and I could see it, and I could see it as a film, and I could see it as a chapter in a historical novel. Of course, and I'm thinking that, you know, Jung was walking in those landscapes in and around Basel when he was about 15, you know.
But
he was born in 1875, and Basel was the home area. I used to wander that area. It's not necessarily about Jung, but it made me think about Jung's period, which I know a bit about. It's interesting if there's an echo across time, across lives, across incarnations between the tragedy on the canal in Basel in the late 19th century and what was happening in your neck of the woods today. I mean, our dreams do suggest such connections. I mean, it's impossible for me not to be open to the idea that the dramas that are playing in our lives now are related in some way, if only by resemblance, the dramas that are being experienced somewhere else. And from a certain point of view, it's all going on now, at least in dreams. We're not confined to one passage in time. We can go forwards, backwards, or sideways. But the key thing that I wanted you to confirm for us is that dreams give us some great material. I mean, it was cinematic in its quality. It was very visual, very alive, very sensory. There it was, and I think of many dreams of my own. So sometimes, particularly if you're engaged in the creative arts, painter, writer, filmmaker, whatever, sometimes it's not really so much about what the dream means. It's about what the dream gives you in terms of material that you can work out. I mean, what can you weave or unweave, depending on how it looks and how you look at it, that will be a creation in its own right. And I think actually this, for some of us, becomes more exciting and more important than trying to decode and figure out what a dream is saying. Well, beyond that, let's get with the energy of the dream. Let's get with its kinesthetics. Let's get with its colors and its shapes and its Play-Doh possibilities and produce something creative. Help us to participate in the constant round of new birth that life invites us to join in, something like that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you, Camilla.
Likewise.
I think of our late night sessions on the deck at Mosswood Hollow, a magical retreat center where some of us gather now once a year to tell stories and create new stories and do what dreamers do best. It's lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what I have left unsaid. So many things. Because of our topic today and because of your book, in the ways in which writers have been helped, and I think I'll just leave us in this last segment with a Graham Greene story. He was really a pro. Graham Greene, who was a writer's writer, got it out 750 words a morning, no matter how many drinks he'd had the night before. And he would actually ask his dreams to fill in gaps in the plot, give him lines of dialogue that were missing, define a character, and his dreams, according to what he wrote about them, performed. Mine don't perform quite as obediently as that, but they do give us constant renewal and constant inspiration. All right, you've been listening to Way of the Dreamer. We'll be back after the break to say dream on.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, Camilla, thank you for sharing. May your best poems, stories, and dreams come true.
Thank you, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
To everybody, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.